presentations and was so impressed that I started scouring the internet to find more presentations to hear, to watch. And after watching all those different presentations, I thought, she has to come here. So I'm very glad that she has been able to join us, and I'm sure you will be blessed and enlightened by the things she has to share. Let's start with a word of prayer. Our dear Father in heaven, God of the universe, we thank you for loving us, for always being there for us. Lord, we ask that you will be with us now, that your presence will be with us, and bless Cinda as she speaks to us. Speak through her. Thank you in Jesus' precious name. Amen.
Well, that light's bright. Okay. I'm going to introduce you to my family, since you'll hear quite a bit about them. My husband, Ron, he's the backbone of all my stuff. He's the one that helps me with all my technology. He usually travels with me. So he takes care of all the technical stuff. The girl on your left is my oldest. Her name is Stacy. And the one sitting down is Autumn. My girls are... I'll go to the next one. This was taken 2013. I was asking my husband when that was taken, 2013. This is my daughter, Stacy, her wedding day. This was 3 years ago. My girls have waited a long time to find their soulmates. She's 41. She just turned 41 last weekend. And my oldest is 39. And I don't know if they'd like me telling you that, but anyway, so Stacy waited a long time, and she really wanted to marry a pastor, so she found her pastor. When she was 6 years old, she wanted to do Bible studies, so we took her around. She didn't know how to read, so I thought I needed to teach her how to read first so she can do that. So I taught her how to read, and I gave her 7 texts, and she went around doing Bible studies. And right after she got done with college, she did went to Andrews University. She wanted to work for the Michigan Conference, so she volunteered her time. And she was with them 6 months, and then they picked her up, and she's been there about 12 or 13 years now working for them. She was doing all their Bible work and overseeing their Bible work, and then she helps write all their manuals. And her husband was a businessman, and he stopped and wanted to go into ministry, so he did it on just volunteer. And then the conference picked him up in January, and they got married in May of 2015. So she got her pastor. My youngest worked for, she was a teacher by trade. She actually worked for Fountain View Academy. She was there, she was a chemistry teacher. She's been at Bath. She went to Africa. She likes to travel, and so she went to Maxwell. While she was in Maxwell for a year teaching, she decided to stay a month and go to all the bush hospitals. She wanted to see what that was like. And the surgeon there lost all his people, so he called her right into surgery. So she started doing surgery the first day she got there. And she thought that, and that only happens in Africa, you know. So anyway, she loved it. So she came back. She went to Bath, and while she was there, she was a dean teaching, and she went to work on some prereqs for nursing while she was there. Put in a lot of hours, and then she came and stayed with us for a 14-month program that she just finished at Michigan State University, and now she's an ICU nurse in Chattanooga. She just went down in February and loves it. She said she doesn't have to bring home any homework and no grading, so she thinks it's great. She can leave it there. So anyway, that's to let you know who my children are, because you'll hear a lot about them. First of all, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I homeschooled my own children. And I actually, after my children were grown, and a lot of these stories are from my children and from other children that I've taken in, because I actually would work in homes as well. But after my children were grown, I asked my husband, I said, you know, I'm really missing my children. We can either adopt, or I could teach, or we could have, of course, more children. And he says, why don't you go teach? So that's what I did. I went to teach for a while. But I went to teach because I wanted to actually work with hearts, but there's so much curriculum that you do, so I didn't really get to do the heart work. And also in that time, I noticed that there was a lot of children that were struggling and learning, so I went to work on my master's, and I did it in right brain learning. So I have my master's in education, but I actually work with literacy and math, And then I opened up my own practice in 2007. So I work with children with dyslexia and adults with dyslexia, which is reading issues, dysgraphia, writing issues, dyscalculia, math, and autism, and ADHD. So those are the programs I do. I will be sharing some of that as we go through because there's a method that I actually work with parents that have ADHD children. It's a little bit different in parenting, and a lot of parents that are working with their children are ADHD, the parent is also ADHD, and so sometimes it's very hard for them to do some of the practical training. So I'll be sharing some of that as we go through this program. I travel a lot of different places. I even went to Sweden. They asked me to do a parenting seminar over there. And I find that there's a lot of parents that have very misbehaved children, and so they're trying all different methods. They're trying to talk to them, reason with them, ask them, yell at them, nag them to get some change. And instead of getting that change the parents are wanting to see, they're getting more screaming from the kids, back-talking, a lot of forms of rudeness. So the parents resort to spankings, times out, ignoring, talking more, or taking away computer time, phone, treats, different privileges to try to get this change, but it's still not happening. Instead, a lot of these parents are seeing more intensity in bad behavior. And so they're asking, what do we do? What's happening? And I did the same thing when my children were little. Not that I had really bad children, but at the same time, I wanted righteous children. I don't want them just to be good because I was around, but they would choose to be good when I wasn't around. That's what I really wanted. And so I started praying, and I looked for the mentors in my church. And I didn't see a lot of parents that had children. You know, you always look at the children to see who's doing it, so you know who to go talk to. And I wasn't seeing the type of behavior that I wanted from mine. So I just got on my knees and I said, okay, Lord, this is just you and I. You're going to have to show me what I'm doing because I don't know. And I was a very rebellious teenager. So, matter of fact, I was a motorcycle mama. Can you believe that? I would get on one of those Harleys and go down the road, you know. And it was because it was the epitome of rebellion. And I was very, very rebellious. Matter of fact, I remember my dad taking me out one time. And I didn't know it, but I put my mom on tranquilizers. I was so bad. And he told me that I needed to straighten up or he needed to put me in a girls' home because he wasn't going to see me destroy my mom. And so I just got sneakier instead of changing. It wasn't until I became a Christian that those things changed. But so I know what it's like to have that rebellion in your own heart. And so anyway, my husband and I, after our children, well, even when they were young, we started taking in rebellious teenagers. And we did that for quite some time while girls were little. And then we took in one that was the influence. She was 16. But she had the mentality of an 11-year-old. So she wanted to play dolls with my girls, but yet she had she was there because she thought she was pregnant. So she had a lot of knowledge base, and it was just not a good fit anymore because I had to be there all the time around them just to watch conversations. And then we started taking in small children. So we did that for a while, and then I started working in homes too because people wanted to know what I was doing. So I went into homes. And I was kind of like a super nanny. And at that time, that show wasn't around. I wish I had known. I could have made that show, but I was a super nanny. So I'd go in and just stay there 1 week first to see what was going on, the dynamics of the family, figure out what I could do to help. And then I'd sit down with the parents and share what I could do to help them. And if they agreed to it and they wanted to do this, then the rule was when I come in, I become the parent. So I set up everything that needed to be set up, and then I trained the parents to take over from there. And so I did that for about 11 years, and then I just got too busy. So and people still called, do you still do that? But I just got too busy, so once my practice started. So now I just have the pleasure of working with kids with ADHD and autism, and then do parenting seminars on the side. So. Like I said, I really wanted to have children that were righteous. And so I started asking the Lord to show me what it is that I need. And everything I'm going to be showing with you or sharing this week is things that He's taught me. And this is only a very small portion. I have like a 10-plus hour presentation that I give. So this is just a very small little piece, but it's usually the ones that churches are asking for because it's, I don't want to say the more practical part, but some of the things that are easy to implement. So that's what I'll be sharing with you. So I'm going to start off with the European cuckoo bird. Is anybody familiar with this bird? Have you ever heard of him? In America, he has a cousin called the common cuckoo bird, or he's also known as the cowbird. Have you heard of him? The cowbird, he's a very interesting bird. Most birds, when they want babies, they start building nests. And the nest will come in all different shapes and sizes. Isn't it interesting how God's made all these? But this bird doesn't want to make a nest. It actually wants to find a nest already made. It's called a brood parasite bird. And he's going to actually have somebody else raise her babies. So she wants a nest, but she doesn't want just any nest. She wants a nest that actually has eggs in it. So she goes around looking until she can find a nest that has eggs. And she wants somebody else to raise her young. And so see, there's some of the birds that she will pick. This is the red-eyed vireo bird. So she'll look for those kind of eggs. Or the weed wobbler. These are some of her favorite birds. The yellow-rumped wobbler. And then she sits by and she watches. And she watches and she watches. She's waiting for the mama bird to fly away. And the minute the mama bird flies away, she comes into the nest and she will actually eat one or two of the eggs. And then she turns away and turns around and lays two of her eggs. And then she flies off. She doesn't do it just one time. She does it 14 different times. And this is her eggs. They are the bigger ones, the bluer ones. This is in the red-eyed vireo nest that she laid them in. And this is in the common cuckoo nest. She laid it in the weed wobbler's nest. Now, this one looks pretty much the same, right? It's just a little bigger. But this one, I often wonder, are the birds blind or colorblind? And when you look online and you look at some of the eggs, some of them will be yellow and this one's white. I mean, there's a lot of contrast between them. And I often wonder, is the mother just doesn't notice or she just says, oh, well, the baby's there. I'll go ahead and raise the baby. But anyway, that's what happens. She starts raising these babies. Now, this bird is born 1 or 2 days earlier than the other babies, and it does something very strange. Not called strange, I call it very selfish. It's very much like its mama, selfish in nature, and it wants to be the only one in that nest. And so it has a nice little scoop in its back, and so it will get up to that egg, and in that scoop of its back, it will actually push that, this is a better picture of it, push that egg out of the nest. And then it goes around and finds another egg and pushes it out, and then goes around and finds another egg and pushes it out, and keeps going all the way around the nest until there's no more eggs in there, because it wants to be the only one being fed and taken care of. Now, the cowbird is a little different. It doesn't push the eggs out, but because it's so much bigger than the other one, it opens its mouth, that's that red mouth, and the other one's a little yellow mouth, and it cries, and so it gets most of the food, so it starves the other little babies. Very selfish little bird. And then it spends the rest of its time crying and crying and crying, so the adopted mother spends the rest of her time feeding it constantly. Now, the little bird is the mommy, and the big bird is the baby. And so as you can see, that baby needs lots and lots of food. So it's crying, and mother goes off and brings back food, and mother goes off and brings back food. And it makes so much noise that even other birds flying by stop to feed it. Now, isn't that pretty selfish? So this bird is being fed by everybody because it's so noisy. And the fact that it's so noisy, it becomes food for the foxes, the weasels, and the hawks, because it's so noisy. There's a lot of lessons in this cuckoo bird. One is she really wanted to have babies, but she didn't want to set up an environment that she was going to take care of these children or these little birds. She wanted somebody else to take care of them. And we see a lot of that sometimes, that people want children, but they really don't have the time to raise them, so they're putting them in daycares, sitters, grandparents, other people. And sometimes we're in a society that you have to have two incomes. And so sometimes it's just out of necessity, or you need a necessity that you have to put them someplace. But at that time, when you need to do that, then you need to realize that other people are going to be raising your children and spend a lot of time with them. So find people that have your same values, that think the way that you think, because your children are picking up those. And I know as a teacher, when I actually taught, I had those children so much of the day than what the parents had, that I felt like I needed to work with their character, because I'm the one that was watching them, I was the one that was there, so I needed to do something with those children that were placed in my care. Other people put them in front of the TV and the computer. And I've been in homes several times, and I don't know if they even have them now, but when my kids were little, they had those swings that you swing back and forth and you crank them up. Are those still out there? I don't even know. Does anybody know those type of things are still out there? Anyway, so they put them in front of those and swing it, and then the child's watching TV. And if you had walked in my home, you would have seen the same thing. My baby was sitting there, and the swing was all cranked up, and she was watching Big Bird. And when she was about 3 years old, this is Stacy, when she was about 3 years old, she would run to me and say, "Mama, tea, tea." And she was asking, tea was TV, and she'd say, "Bird, Mama, bird." She wanted to watch Big Bird on TV. And I thought, I'm putting a love for this bird in the heart of my child. So I told the Lord, okay, I'm getting rid of this TV. And but my own selfish heart liked that TV. So instead of getting rid of it, we decided to put it in the closet. If we just put it in the closet, we'd pull it out for special things. And then I guess we got tired of pulling it out because one day my husband and I turned to each other and we were sitting on the bed and the closet doors were open. The TV was inside the closet and we were watching the TV inside the closet. And I said, "I think this TV has a hold on us. I think we need to get rid of it." So we called his sister and we asked if she wanted to make a trade. She'd take our TV, or we would give her the TV and a gun that my husband had in exchange for the family piano. So we got the family piano. So we had a much better trade. So anyway, that's what you'll see, is that these kind of things are happening. And also, like I said, the cuckoo bird, the babies themselves were growing up very selfish, and that's why they wanted everything for themselves. That's all they thought about, and that's why they got rid of the other ones. And I know if you want to know your own character, listen to your children, watch them. I remember the day that we got one of those play phones that you could ring them and then talk on them. And Stacy was on that phone, and she was going, and I thought, oh, is that what I sound like? Must have been what I sound like, because she was mocking me. So I thought, oh, okay, I need to change this. So if you don't know how you act, watch your children. They'll show you your anger, your impatience, just by watching them. Like I said, this is not what I wanted for my own children. I wanted my children to be righteous. So I asked the Lord, what is it that I need to do? God has given parents their work to form the characters of their children after the divine pattern. By his grace, they can accomplish the task, but it will require patience, painstaking effort, no less than firmness and decision to guide the will and restrain the passions. Here is your work, parents, to develop the characters of your children in harmony with the precepts of the Word of God. This work should come first, for eternal interests are here involved. The character building of your children is of more importance than the cultivation of your farms, more essential than the building of houses to live in or prosecuting any manner of business or trade. You know, when I read this, I thought, you know, this really isn't my first work. It's not where I'm putting my priorities. Mine was more my home. I spent a lot of time decorating it, putting it together, but not so much working with their character. When people would call me and I'd be on the phone, when there was a discipline issue that came up, instead of getting off and taking care of it, I would remain on the phone. And I just realized that I wasn't putting anything into my children. And the Lord was trying to tell me, Cinda, this is your first work. This is where you need to dedicate your life. And you're just going to have to tell people, excuse you. You know, when they call and there's an issue come up, tell them, I'm sorry, I got to take care of this issue, and I'll be back in touch with you. And so that's what I needed to find out. A character formed according to the divine likeness is the only treasure that we can take from this world to the next. And I had to accept this by faith when I started reading all these, because at this time my children were probably about 4 and 5, so I didn't know all the work that I was going to put into it, if I was really going to reap that. But since then, I've seen that. You know, my children love the Lord, they serve the Lord, and so I got what I wanted. But this time it was just a faith experience. If Christian mothers will present to society children with integrity of character, with firm principles and sound morals, they will have performed the most important of all missionary labors. Their children thoroughly educated to take their place in society are the greatest evidence of Christianity that can be given to the world. I remember when the girls were small, I had this mother in Israel that I talked to quite a bit, and I told her I couldn't wait till God was going to show me what I was going to do, this great missionary work that I was going to do, and all these places I wanted to go and serve. And she'd say, "Well, Cinda, what are your children?" And I said, my children? She said, no, what are your children? And she was trying to tell me, this is my first missionary work, so put your efforts there. It is the duty of those who claim to be Christians to present to the world well-ordered, well-disciplined families, families that will show the true power, or the power of true Christianity. Now, I had this thought in my head, and I'm glad I didn't share it with anybody because they probably should have told me it will never happen. But in my mind, and I don't know where I got this, that if a child would choose to be righteous. If a child didn't choose to be righteous, they would choose to take their punishment, even to the point that they would come to me with what implement I was using for discipline and say, here, Mommy, you need to discipline me. I've been bad. Now, I didn't share that with anybody, and somebody, like I said, said, I'm nuts. But I didn't know I was nuts, so that's what I started out to do, and that's exactly what happened. Every time that my children, I used what I called the rod of correction, which I'll get to later on in our presentation. When I needed to use that, my children would actually bring it to me and say, we have sinned. You need to use this. And so it does work. And somebody said, well, that's because you have girls. You don't have boys. It's different. So I told the Lord, I said, I need a boy, and I need a really bad boy. I don't want a good boy. I want a really bad boy. And the Lord answered my prayers. He gave us a boy for 8 weeks. And I remember when we were going to take him, my girl said, oh, no, Mom, you got to be kidding, not Danny. And I said, look, God's opportunity. His mom actually ended up with cancer and needed a place for Danny, so he came to stay with us for 8 weeks. And a lot of my stories in here are actually about Danny, because Danny was a very, very strong-willed little boy. But he surrendered when he was at our house. And anyway, I'll go on and tell you about him in a little bit. True discipline, disciplining, is discipling my child to be like Christ. So our discipline techniques will either strengthen our child's self or help our child to overcome self. Now, these are the wrong methods. I used all these: ignoring the child, bribing the child, threatening the child, letting the child rule, or commanding or forcing the will. And I'm going to go through each one of these, but these are not God's methods. God's methods are designed to do two things: enlist the will and teach self-control, and these will not do that. The object of discipline is the training of the child for self-government. He should be taught self-reliance and self-control. So what do man's methods do? Ignoring or letting the child rule teaches them self is in control. Bribing or threatening, self is still in control. Commanding or forcing the will, the child has no self. So let's look at ignoring. The biggest one I see is temper tantrums, ignoring the child and going in the other room. And at the time, my kids were little, I was reading all the books that were out there too. And that's what it said, just ignore it. Go in the other room and don't pay attention to it. But my children would just got louder if I went in the other room. And I remember as a child, I used to throw tantrums too. I hate to say this, but I did. And my mom would shut the door. And it's no fun to throw a temper tantrum when no one's listening to you. So I would go, stop long enough to open the door, and then start screaming again. So my mom would come and just know how unhappy I was. So I never found that it worked. And I remember I went to, my parents live in Arizona, and at that time I had a niece that was 3. She's 10 now, but she was 3. And when I went to go visit, my dad said, talk to Taylor and ask her about temper tantrums. So I said, Taylor, what do you know about temper tantrums? She said, oh, I'm really good at those. And I said, you are? And she said, yeah, you want me to show you how to do a temper tantrum? And I said, sure. She's 3. So she took me in the bedroom, and she laid down. She said, you got to get down on your tummy. So you get down on your tummy, and then you got to kick your feet really, really hard. So she's kicking her feet really, really hard. And she said, and then you got to scream really loud so they know that you're really upset. So you start crying and screaming, and she was showing me all this. And then she said, and the other thing you need to do is put your fingers like this, because you got to see what's happening, because you got to make sure somebody's watching you, but you can't let them see that you're seeing. Now, of course, her parents knew that she was looking, but anyway, so she was down here throwing this temper tantrum, showing me how. Now, if a 3-year-old can demonstrate how to do a temper tantrum, we know that they know what they're doing, and if it works, they're going to continue doing it. Anything that works for a child is going to continue doing it. If it stops working, they stop doing it. And so we should never reward a temper tantrum. The other is giving the child instructions but do not require them to follow through. A lot of times parents are busy and tell them what to do, and then they walk away in the other room, and so the child ends up ignoring you. And if they do that, then that means you have no, they know that your word is not law, that what you're saying does not apply. As long as they can distract you, you're going to forget about it. So if you teach your child, tell them to do something, make sure you follow through, that they're doing what you ask them to do. When parents fail to require prompt and perfect obedience in their children, they fail to lay the right foundation of character in their little ones. They prepare their children to dishonor them when they are old and bring sorrow to their hearts when they are nearing the grave. And this is so true, because they'll grow up to be 4, 6, 8, 18, and still having fits. And like I said, we took those rebellious teens into our home. These are all Adventist kids that we took in. So why parents ignore? I think some of them are just tired, not paying attention to what's going on, want the child to like them. I found this a lot if I worked in single-parent homes or if I worked in divided homes. This was going on where divorce homes, where the children were going different places. One parent wanted to be the good guy, didn't want to always be doing the discipline. Or it worked in the homes where both of them, the parents were not on board on the same discipline. You would find this. One parent, the children, they thought the child would like them better if they didn't discipline. But I find in most homes, children like you better when you discipline, because they know their boundaries. And that's what Danny told me. He loved our home because he knew his boundaries when he was in. Matter of fact, the day that he left, he was crying. And I said, are you happy because your mom's coming home? He said, yeah, I'm happy. And I said, well, what's the matter? And he said, I love your home. And I said, why? He says, well, I know when to eat. I know when to sleep. I know when to have my worships. He was saying, I like your boundaries. I know what's expected of me here. And that's what he liked about our home. They don't like conflict. And I find this a lot in situations where you're out in the store or you're at church. I see it a lot at churches, too. Where the kids start screaming and yelling, and the parent doesn't want that conflict. It's embarrassing, so they stop. They don't do anything more. So you'll see that. And some parents say that I'm protecting their child by ignoring bad behavior, and it usually comes more when somebody else points out the bad behavior. There's something happening with your child. The parent will protect that child instead of letting that child reap some of the negative consequences from that experience. And so this is teaching our children by ignoring them that self is really in control. Instead of being self-controlled, which is the surrender of the will or of self, so we don't want to ignoring teaches my child to have self in control instead of being self-controlled, which is a surrender of self. And that's really what we want from our children. So instead of ignoring, we need to respond to the child. So instead of letting them respond to our child, so instead of letting them do temper tantrums, we need to stop it. Now, I brought this little, I asked Esther for a doll, but the bear was better. So when I work with children, and like I said, I have to work, and I was a teacher too, so you have to be very creative in the classroom, because you can't use some of that 2x4 diplomacy that I was raised with. You can't use anything like that, so you have to be very creative. And so for me, when my children were having a temper tantrum, she says to hold them close and to rebuke the evil spirit. So I just hold them close and I start singing to them and praying with them, and they would settle down. Well, in my classroom, I had a little child that would bite me every time I tried to just hold him. He would bite me. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Al Wolfson. He's been gone a long time, but he used to work in medical missionary, and he worked among the Indians, and they had a thing called the Indian hold. And what they did is take the child, and you wrestle the child a little bit, but you have them in front of you, and you go between their legs, and then you grab their hands. I have to find this little guy's arms. You're holding their arms like this, so you're in between the legs, and you're holding their arms. Last seminar I did, somebody brought me up a baby, to use a real baby. So anyway, and then you sit off to the side, and you just sit down, because you're holding them, and then you just get out of your head, out of the way. So what happens, I have the arms out here, so they can't hit me. They can't bite me, and I move because they'll take their head and slap me. So I've had this happen in my classroom several times. And then I just hold them. I'm not hurting them, just holding them so that they can't move, and just say, as soon as you calm down, I'm going to let you go. But you'll hurt me, or you're going to hurt somebody else because you're so mad right now. So I'm just going to hold you, and you just let me know. In this classroom, we actually prayed that the Lord would be there to calm the child, and then we started singing. And then I could feel the child relax in my arms, and then, of course, I always turn them around and talk to them. So I really, all I'm doing is trying to stop the tantrum so that I can talk with the child. And so that's what we're trying to do, is get our children to respond to us in positive ways rather than in negative ways. Give the child instructions and make sure they are followed. So anytime you're going to say something, don't walk in the other room. Watch to see if it's going to take place. Among the first tasks of the mothers is the restraining of passion in her little ones. Children should not be allowed to manifest anger. They should not be permitted to throw themselves upon the floor, striking and crying, because something has been denied them which was not for their best good. I have been distressed as I have seen how many parents indulge their children in the display of angry passions. Mothers seem to look upon these outbursts of anger as something that must be endured and appear indifferent to the child's behaviors. But if an evil is permitted once, it will be repeated, and its repetition will result in habit. And so the child's character will receive an evil mold. This is the time to rebuke the evil spirit. And that's what we're doing. It's an evil mold. We're stamping that on the character of our children. And later on in our presentation, we'll look at that concept that thoughts create a feeling an action a habit, habit a character, or habit a habit. A character and a character of destiny. And we're going to be going into that more. So you're actually, by doing those things, we are hurting our children and not preparing them for God's kingdom. The other one is bribing. The purpose of bribing is to offer something so the child obeys. And it can be food, toys, or special treats. I started with M&Ms, and I bribed my children with M&Ms, but I had one child that would go up, bounce off the walls when she got sugar, and the other one would sit in the corner and cry. And then we went into the health message, and then I gave raisins to enforce this behavior. So, but the problem is, are you give, one time I was at a wedding, and somebody said, okay, if you just walk down that aisle for this wedding, there's cake at the end, so just walk down this aisle so you can get cake. Are we bribed with toys? I even had somebody say that if you won't go to heaven, you know, so if you want to go to heaven, and that's a terrible thing. We don't go to heaven for that reason, just to be, we want Jesus in the heart. And so we don't want to just bribe our children. And the sad thing is we don't realize that when we're bribing our children, in order for them to get what we're giving them, they have to be bad first. And I think, isn't that strange? So we want the children to be bad so they can get a treat. So we're teaching them to be bad just so we can reward them, instead of rewarding them because they've done something right. And I don't know if you see a problem with this, but I do. We are rewarding our children for bad behavior. In bribing, the child chooses to obey or not obey according to how he or she feels about the reward. So if the child likes the reward, they will obey. But if they don't like the reward, they're not going to obey anyway. So bribing teaches my child to have self in control instead of being self-controlled. And I think the biggest one that I encountered was whining. So every time a child whined, the parent would ask the child to stop and reward them if they stopped their whining. And that way, but the child has to whine in order to get what they want, like I said earlier. So instead, what I teach parents is only reward them if they speak proper to you. So if they speak kindly and nicely, then they get a reward. But they have to learn how to speak correctly to you. Some parents are doing timeout. And I don't know what it is now, but when my girls were little, if they were two, they had 2 minutes timeout. If they were three, they had 3 minutes timeout. Four minutes out. The problem is that you have a child in the corner and say that they're five, so you have 5 minutes out, and they start screaming before that 5 minutes is up. When you take them out of the corner, they think they got out of the corner, not because that 5 minutes was up, but because they screamed to get out of that corner. So what you think is being a positive situation isn't working at all as a positive situation. God's method, instead of bribing the child, reward the child. We want obedience because it's right, and they love Jesus, and that's what we're looking for. And I know when I work with ADD children, we actually have to clay a lot of scenarios, positive consequences and negative consequences, because they don't know how to do cause and effect. So I have to teach them how to do cause and effect. And every time when I ask them, what is a consequence? Children, maybe I'd ask you, what's a consequence? What does a consequence mean? Anybody? What's a consequence mean? Do you know? Do you? Anybody? You, young man, do you know? Do you know what a consequence is? Anyone? Anybody? OK, Okay, adults, what's the consequence? The results of your actions, what do you think? Huh? A result, okay. And the kids always tell me a negative result is something you get taken away or something. They don't ever tell me a positive result that happens. But we have positive consequences too. If you work and do a good job, you get paid for it. If you don't, you get fired. But there's positive, but they never have a positive for me. They always tell me the negative ones. We want our children to obey because of obedience, not to get obedience. Now, it can still be rewards like praises, hugs, stickers, toys, food. It can even be special treats. It can be those, but you're not doing it because to get something from them, but because they are obedient, you're rewarding them, not to make them obedient. I took Danny shopping, and we were gone 2 hours, and Danny had a problem with touching everything. So I feel like the people in the store lose money if they're touching. So I told Danny, I don't want you to touch when we go in the store. So I was teaching him how properly to handle the things in the store. Now, I thought what I could do is I could either bribe him that if you're good, I'll give you something at the end, or I could reward him. Those are my choices that I could take. And but if I bribed him, if you'll be good while I'm shopping, I'll get your toy. Is it easy to be good? And that's what I had to ask my kids every time I was bribing them and asking them to be good. I realized it's not easy to be good. Good is something that we have to learn. It's easier for our natures to be bad or to do something bad. And so it takes a lot for them to learn to be good. And what I'm teaching them by saying that is be good so you get something. And I wanted them to choose obedience because it's right and they love Jesus. So when I took Danny to the store, I asked him first, Danny, is it easy for you to put your hands in your pocket? Now, he was 5, and he said, oh, yeah, sure, I can do that, Aunt Cinda. So he put his hands in his pocket to show me. And I said, can you take them out, too? He said, oh, yeah, sure, and he took them out. And so I said, is it easy? He said, yeah, it's really easy. Watch. And he'd go in and out, in and out, in and out. He said, it's really simple. And I said, good. Okay, so when we go shopping, what I want you to do is I just want you to put your hands in your pocket and keep them there until I ask you to take them out. And then when I ask you to take them out, then you take them out. Okay, do you think you can do that? He said, oh, sure, I can do that, Aunt Cinda. So we went to the store, and he stuck his hands in his pocket. Well, first I forgot to tell him he was touching everything, and I said, Danny, now it's time to put your hands in your pocket. So he put his hands in his pocket, and he had a sweatshirt on. And when he was walking around, he went to touch something, and his hand was in his pocket. So when he lifted up, he went, oh, my hand's in my pocket. I'm not supposed to touch. So he put it back down. So it was kind of a reminder for him. And then he went again. He was going to touch something. And he goes, oh, my hand's in my pocket. I'll put it down. So we got down the first store. We went to the second store. And again, I forgot to tell him to put his hands in his pocket. So he was touching everything. And I said, Danny, I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you. Put your hands in your pocket. So again, his hands were in the pocket. By the time we got to the third store, his hands were in his pocket. And I said, Danny, was it easy for you to take your hands out? He said, yes, see, I can do it. It's real easy. And I said, so at any time when we were in the store, you could have taken your hands out, right? He said, oh, yeah. I said, why didn't you? He said, because you asked me to put my hands in my pocket and not take them out until you asked me. And I said, so you chose to obey me. He said, yes. I said, because you chose to obey me, I want to reward that because I know it wasn't easy for you because I know how much you like to touch stuff. So we're going to go over to these toys. He liked car toys, those little metal cars. I said, I want you to pick 2 of them that you can take home. He kept his hands in his pocket, and he was looking at the toys. And I said, now you can take your hands out because now you're going to buy something, but touch them carefully. We don't want to mess up the package, so touch them carefully. So he picked up the 2 that he wanted, and we started walking out of the store or towards the counter to pay for him, and he started crying. And I said, Danny, what's wrong? Why are you crying? He said, it feels so good to obey. I said, doesn't it feel good to obey? So I gave him something simple he was able to obey with instead of something that was hard. So always reward the child, either with a praise or a hug or a thank you for their choices that they make. If a major battle took place in the decision to be obedient or not to be obedient, I always rewarded them with something special because I know how hard it is. Man's method, threatening. The purpose of threatening is to offer something so the child obeys. Now, the difference, usually something is unpleasant rather than something pleasant. So it's the same thing as a bribe, but a bribe is something good. A threat is something that's not good. I know when I got threats, it's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to go there. So threats could be spankings, stay home, we're going to go do something, but you're going to have to stay home, wait until we get home. That was a big one at my house. Wait until we get home. It's like, uh-oh. Or wait till your dad gets home. I didn't want my children to ever be afraid of their father, so I never said, wait till your dad gets home. I wanted when dad came home to be a good experience. So I never used that. Another one was Santa. Santa's not going to bring you toys if you're not good. And I don't think that's why our children should be good, to get a toy. So, or you can't go to heaven, like I said before. God will punish you, and you're not going to get to go to heaven. And I don't think our children need those type of threats. So parents use threats because they don't know really how to deal with the problem. And some of them are avoiding that parental responsibility, and they're turning it off to God. Don't ever give God that responsibility. God placed these children into your hands to take the responsibility. So God's wanting us to learn how to properly work with them. So why parents bribe or threaten? They do not want to deal with the problem. They're too tired, which comes up again. They don't know what to do, and that's usually what I have a parent say, I don't know what to do. And even working, especially with my ADD families, they're always calling and saying, I really don't know how to take care of this bad behavior. What do I do? Or they just don't have time. They're too busy. And I tell you, it just seems like the enemy always attacks when you're going out the door and you have to be someplace. That's when he attacks. And so I'd always turn to my children and saying, I know right now I can't deal with this because I have to be somewhere, but I do want you to know as soon as we get home, I'm going to be taking care of this. But I just can't do it right now. And threatening, the child chooses to obey or not obey according to how he or she feels about the reward. Again, if they like it, they obey. If they don't like it, they disobey. And sometimes a child will do something bad just because they want to do it so bad. And I have a child that's very stubborn by nature. And I would tell her not to touch something. And she knew if she got to the other end and touched it, she was going to get a spanking. So she would start at this end with her hand out crying, walking across the floor, going to touch it anyway, crying because she knew she was going to get one at the other end, but still wanting to touch it so bad that she had to do it. So, and I didn't disappoint her. She always got that reward that she wanted. Threatening teaches my child to have self-control instead of being self-controlled. God's method, instead of threatening the child, we need to teach cause to effect. And this helps the child to see that every decision brings a consequence, either good or bad. Now, I'm going to spend, when we get, let's see, tomorrow afternoon, we have a whole series on dealing with cause to effect. And so I'm going to be spending a lot of time on that when we get to that part. So I'm just going to do a couple here. That when we're setting up this, children need to have logical consequences for actions. And this is a couple that we were doing. When Danny came to stay with us, we went for a walk one day. And I told Danny, when we were walking, they had some big stumps and roots in the path. And I said, Danny, do you know what these are? And he said, yeah, those are roots and those are stumps. And he says, why are they so big and so tall? And I said, because the rain has washed away the dirt. And anyway, I wanted to show you these because I need you to walk the path. And you may stumble anyway because these are high. And if you hit one and you fall, it may hurt. But it's not going to hurt as bad as if you start running. Because if you run and you hit one, you have all that momentum behind you. And then you're going to go slide across that path. And that's really going to hurt. So I would prefer you to walk. Now, I was actually giving him a choice. I didn't tell him he had to. And he walked for a while. And then he started running. Now, I could have stopped him because I knew he was going to get hurt, but I decided to let him have that natural consequence. So I went ahead and let him do it, and sure enough, he fell, and he was crying, and he was pretty scratched up. So after I hugged him and calmed him down, I said, now, Danny, do you understand why I asked you to walk rather than run? And he said, yeah, it hurt. And I said, it does. But you have a choice now. You can either walk or you can run. What would you like to do? And he says, I think I'll walk. And I said, I think that's a good choice. So he walked the rest of the way. So he was actually learning what a consequence was. That's a natural consequence. Now, for him, we want our children to choose obedience. In order to do that, they need to realize that bad choices hurt. To help them see this, we need standards and consequences. So for him, I set up a poster. And at this time, I only had the negative ones set up. later on, we'll talk about how to do the positive, too. But this one, I only had the negative. And other parents, when I've worked with them, they have both. So they have the standard in the center, and then one side will be the positive consequences and then the negative consequences. So it could be turn off lights, you pay money if you don't, pick up toys. I had a toy box, and the toys went in my box. And if they wanted them back, they had to pay them to get back, and or buy a chore or something to get the toy back. And so that's some of the things that I did. No play at the table, they get down. This one wasn't so hard for me to do with my children. It was really hard to teach my husband not to play at the table. That was the hardest thing. My husband's an engineer by trade, and he's really into experiments. He just loves experiments. And he sits there, and he can take an orange and a grapefruit and an apple, and he can start telling my children about the sun and the moon and the earth and how they all rotate around everything. And I mean, he's really good at what he does. But I told him, you know, that's good, but could you do it during our school time? Because I homeschool, do it during their school time instead of at the table. Because I'm trying to teach them. I don't want them actually playing with toys. Because he would take oil. If you take oil and water, I don't know if you've ever noticed that, and then you put some pepper in there, and you stick your finger, you have the water is in the bowl, and you have pepper flakes, and you have a little bit of soap on your finger, and you stick it in that water, the pepper all goes to one side. So he thought that would be really neat to teach the children how our words really push people away from us. So he had some really good experiments. I didn't mind the experiments, just maybe at a different time than at the dinner table. No hitting the sister. They write love letters. No back talking. I always use cayenne for any time the kid was mouthy. And when I was a teacher, no school papers. You go to school without your papers. I can't tell you how many times I had parents do the paper for the child. And that wasn't teaching the child the consequences of not turning in their stuff. So remember, standards and consequences go hand in hand. You cannot separate them. So if we have a broken standard, take the child to read the poster. The child will not like the consequence. And if they don't like it, then tell them, don't break the standard. And that's what Danny said. Well, I don't like that consequence. And I said, I don't either. So don't break the standard. It's that simple. If you don't break the standard, you don't have a consequence. So broken standards require consequences. So the rules are, do not start every day with brand new standards. Instead, start every day with new choices. So the standards remain the same. Just every day they get to make a new choice. Daily mete out the consequence for the broken standard. Do not reason why did you do that. Negotiate, you need to share. Or give another chance. Would you like to say you're sorry? You've already done that. So instead, take your child to look at the poster, find the standard and consequence, and meet at the consequence. So if it's hitting your sister, you broke the standard, write a love letter. So two things can happen. The child stops doing what's wrong, or they get very good at following through on the consequences. My girls learned how to write some really nice love letters to each other. Either way, good comes from it. As long as we restate our standards every day, you will get nowhere in character development. Some of the standards that we had were obedience, prompt, perfect, willing, and cheerful, and we get into the ones on obedience. Tomorrow afternoon, I'll go into that more. Respect, it needs to be towards God, parental authority, other adult authority, and to their siblings. I always tell my children, you're going to end up marrying somebody just like you, so you guys need to learn how to get along. Honesty, no lying, cheating, stealing, and even going into somebody's room and taking something without asking, I tell them that's stealing. Even though in your mind it's not, you didn't ask for that before you went in there. Or if you come and take something out of my room without asking, that's called stealing. So you need to ask first. The manners, which we'll look at that a little bit later. Treating others, how they treat people, animals, and then following through on any type of instruction that was given to them. The last one is letting the child rule. This way they make the decisions. They give the orders. They demand your exclusive attention. They talk back. Or they argue with you. Now, there is a time that this is behavior that's acceptable when our children are babies. They may scream for what they want, and they're very demanding. But we want to teach them how to come out of that. There was a book that I ordered not too long ago, and I got it because there's a man that works with very, very defiant children, extremely defiant. But most of them have oppositional defiance disorder. Oppositional defiance disorder. Isn't that a big name? Just for bad behavior. Odd. Okay, that's what it is. Okay, odd. ODD. Okay. And ADHD. But he has found it's really in parenting, so he actually just works with the parents. But it's called Mercury's Child. It's kind of like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and children are from Mercury. And then he goes through how to change a Mercury child into an Earthling, because they have to be an Earthling. And so you want to get this baby behavior gone so they're not demanding, so they're asking nicely. And so if you do not teach this child, then you get your little toddlers that are doing all this bad behavior. And if it works, a child's going to continue doing it. If it doesn't work, the child stops. And that's what he's trying to say, is that you always have to change what's happening for your child to change. And I remember the first time I went into a home, it was a home that I was staying with while I was doing a parenting seminar someplace else. And I never move into a home and work with the kids unless the parent has invited me to work with the children, because they haven't asked me, that's not my place, I don't correct children. But I went into this home, and we were going to go out to eat, and this little girl wanted pizza, and mom wanted Mexican food. And I knew the minute that girl said pizza, that's where we were going to go, is to get pizza. Knew we weren't going to do what mom wanted. Anyway, there was this battle going back and forth between this mom and this child. And finally, the mom said, okay, we'll go get pizza. So we ended up going pizza. And I don't know, the mom should have just said right away, okay, we're just going to go get pizza, instead of this battling going back and forth. But I knew that the minute I walked in. Okay, also they pout to get their way. They question your authority. They require you to explain your actions. I remember in a home, and the boy told his mother, he said, I will do what you have asked me to do when you give me a good reason for me to do it. And so the child wasn't going to even go there until the mother had a good reason. They can be rude. They're training the parent. They're not prompt in obedience. If your child is not obeying your instructions or ruling the situation, stop and make sure they follow through right then, especially with strong-willed children. And I see more of the child ruling the home and single parents, the only child. I was called to work with the family. And I had my child training tapes out there, and so I have a lot of families that will call and ask if I'll come work with their family, their children. And at that time I did. I went into homes to work with them. But this child was the only child, and the parent was having a hard time because she wasn't listening to the mom, anything that mom said, and the mom had just gotten married, and the child was not accepting the father as authority. And so through prayer, the Lord showed me what the problem was. So I went down and spent some time with her and was talking to her, and she was telling me what the problem was, that this man came into her life, and that she's always been the boss in her home. She's always been the boss. She was five, always been the boss in her home, and now there's a new boss, and she didn't like the new boss. And so children know what's going on, and they play the parent. So I told the parent that's something that she was really going to have to work on, because the parent has set her up in that position, because the mama asked her everything. Would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? Helped to make all the decisions. And so this child felt kind of co-equal, and if the child really wanted something, she got her way. Letting the child rule teaches my child to have self-control instead of being self-controlled. God's method, instead of letting the child rule, parents should rule. One precious lesson which the mother will need to repeat again and again is that the child is not to rule. He is not the master, but her will and her wishes are to be supreme. Thus she is teaching self-control. Give them nothing for which they cry, even if your tender heart desires ever so much to do this. For if they gain the victory once by crying, they will expect to do it again. The second time, the battle will be more vehement. That's so true. The more they battle with you, the louder it gets. So Danny came to stay with us, and it was about 2 days before he was coming. And he walked in my home, and we were just sitting there eating. It was Sabbath. We were eating dinner, and he looked at me, and he said, he's five, I go to bed at 9 o'clock in my home. Now, he knew he was going to come and stay with me for 8 weeks. We didn't know how long. It ended up being 8 weeks, but he knew he would be staying with me for a while. So he was letting me know what the rule was. I go to bed at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in my home. And I said, that's nice, Danny. In my home, you'll be going to bed at 7 o'clock. I go to bed at 9 o'clock in my home. That's nice, Danny, in my home. You're going to be going to bed at 7 o'clock. And he looked at me and he said, I go to bed, not much confidence, at 9 o'clock in my home. I said, I know you do, but in my home, you're going to go to bed at 7 because you're going to get up early, we're going to have worship together, and you're going to have worship, and I want you to be fresh for the day, so you'll go to bed at 7. And then he goes, waits a few minutes, he goes, I'll be going to bed at 7 in your home, huh? I said, yep, you're going to be going to bed at my home at 7. Now, he ruled his home, so he was letting me know right away what his rules were. Another time, we were had a Bible study going on in our house, and this little baby, every time they came and Bible study started, this baby would start screaming. And so I asked the mom if I could take the baby out for a walk. So I took the baby, and we were out walking, and I just held the baby close, just like I did this little bear, and I held the baby close, and I said, I know right now you're tired, and I know you're just fussing. And what you really need is just go to bed. And you're going to go to sleep. I'm going to pray, and Jesus is going to help you, but you're going to end up going to sleep, or you're going to calm down. And I'm going to hold you. So I held that baby tight. I prayed. We claimed promises. I was singing to her. It took about 30 minutes for her to calm down. The next week, they came in my home. I took her again outside. It took about 20 minutes for her to calm down. The next week, it took 10 minutes, and the next one, I picked her up. She started screaming. I didn't even get out of my house. I picked her up. She looked at me and thought, oh, forget it. And she just went to sleep. I'm not even going to fight you anymore. So once they know who's in charge, they just quit. When I went to Montana, I was doing a parenting seminar, and this mama came up, and the baby was screaming, and she said, here, take my baby. It's a week old. And she said, do something. You're this miracle worker. And I said, I'm not a miracle worker. You know, God works miracles. I don't work miracles. But I know what he says to do. He says to hold the baby tight and pray and sing. So that's what I'm going to do. And the whole time, this baby is screaming at me. And she's tired, you know. So I looked at this baby, and I said, it's time for you to go to bed. And she's at me. And I said, it's okay. I'm going to be praying for you. And when I stop praying and say amen, you're going to close your eyes and go to sleep. Now, this baby didn't look like she was going to close her eyes and go to sleep because she was really screaming at me. And the mom was just looking at me like, yeah, 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 right. So anyway, I had prayer. And when I said amen, the baby went, and she was out. And the mom said, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? And I said, well, I'm just as surprised as you are. One, I didn't do it at all. God did it. We just did what he said to hold the baby, pray, and God would do the rest. And that's all I did. I just put God at his word and did what I knew to do, and God did the rest, and the baby went on to sleep. Obedience to parental authority should be inculcated to teach persistently and earnestly in babyhood and cultivated, developed by education or training in youth. We'll be looking more at this when we get into train up a child, because she says treat children, babies, different than you do your older children, so you don't train them the same way. The first care of the parent should be to establish good government in the family. The word of the parent should be law, precluding all arguments or invasions. Children should be taught from infancy to implicitly obey their parents. So the word of the parent needs to be law. Your no needs to be no. Your yes needs to be yes. And I know as a teacher, I used to say, you asked, I answered. And then I just look at them. And if they asked again, I didn't answer. Because I already did. They asked, I answered. So I didn't say it again. And finally they said, okay, I asked, you answered, and then they'd go sit down. When Danny came, his parents were over visiting one day with us, and he found a bow, a stick out in the yard, and he wanted his dad to make him a bow and arrow. And his dad didn't want him to have a bow and arrow. He wanted to make a fishing pole instead, because he didn't want him, I don't know why he didn't want it, but anyway, he didn't want it for Danny. So anyway, he started making a fishing pole, and Danny played for it for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then he got tired of it, and he wanted a bow and arrow. And they were with us the whole weekend. And so he just cried and wanted this bow and arrow. Just went on and on and on for days. And then Sunday, before they left, he said, okay, okay, and he made him the bow and arrow. I thought, boy, that dad just lost that battle with him. And I thought, if the dad's going to lose it, why didn't he just give it to him at the very beginning instead of going through this whole time with him? Because all it did was teach him that if you persevere long enough, you get your way. And children persevere a whole lot stronger than we persevere, or longer than we can persevere. So they can outdo us. Great harm is done by lack of firmness and decision. I have known parents to say, you cannot have this or that, and then relent, thinking they may be too strict or give the child the very thing they at first refused. A lifelong injury is thus inflicted. It is an important law of the mind, one which should not be overlooked, that when a desired object is so firmly denied as to remove all hope, the mind will soon cease to long for it and will be occupied in other pursuits. But as long as there is any hope of gaining the desired object, an effort will be made to obtain it. When it is necessary for parents to give a direct command, the penalty of disobedience should be as unwavering as are the laws of nature. Children who are under this firm, decisive rule know that when a thing is forbidden or denied, no teasing or artifice, will secure their object. Hence, they soon learn to submit and are much happier in so doing. The children of undecided and overindulgent parents have a constant hope that coaxing, crying, sullenness may gain their object or that they may venture to disobey without suffering the penalty. Thus, they are kept in a state of desire, hope, and uncertainty, which makes them restless, irritable, and insubordinate. God holds such parents guilty of wrecking the happiness of their children. That's a pretty intense statement. This wicked mismanagement is the key of impenitence and irreligion of thousands. It has proved the ruin of many who have professed the Christian name. So man's method, commanding or forcing the will, the severe training of youth without properly directing them to think and act for themselves as their own capacity and turn of mind, will allow that by this means they may have growth of thought, feeling of self-respect, and confidence in their own ability to perform, will ever produce a class who are weak in mental and moral power. So she's saying two things, that if we do it right, then they will be able to stand with their own thoughts. But if not, then we have children that do not know how to think things through. And when they stand in the world to act for themselves, they will reveal the fact that they were trained like the animals and not educated. Their wills, instead of being guided, were forced into subjection by the harsh discipline of parents and teachers. To direct the child's development without hindering it by undue control should be the study of both parents and teachers. Too much management is as bad as too little. The effort to break the will of a child is a terrible mistake. Minds are constituted differently. While force may secure outward submission, the result with many children is a more determined rebellion of the heart. So forcing the will is not the answer. We should expect a child to obey external control until the child chooses to obey internal control. I'm going to move right over here. I'm going to skip these a minute because we're going to do this later. Commanding or forcing the will teaches my child to have no self instead of being self-controlled. So instead of forcing the will, God wants us to enlist the will to teach. We want to teach our children to will, surrender, and to obey at His good pleasure. So strength of character consists of two things, the power of the will and the power of self-control. Tomorrow, we're going to be looking at both of these, three ways to enlist the child's will. But she says, save all the strength of the will for the human being needs it all. But give it proper direction. Treat it wisely and tenderly as a sacred treasure. Do not hammer it into pieces, but by precept and true example, wisely fashion and mold it until the child comes to the years of responsibility. Children should early be trained to submit their will and inclination to the will and authority of their parents. When parents teach their children this lesson, they are educating them to submit to God's will and obey His requirements and fitting them to be members of Christ's family. Everyone may place his will on the side of the will of God. They may choose to obey Him, and by thus linking himself with divine agencies, he may stand where nothing can force him to do evil. So tomorrow we'll look at three ways to enlist the will. We'll look at the three judges and King Will that actually came from Eric B. Hare. How many are familiar with Eric B. Hare? And thoughts and feelings make up moral character. That's a statement out of three testimonies. And then the higher and the lower powers. So is there any questions that you have before we close? Yes.
Different things that you see in your home that you like.
Don't have a real long list? I think if you really look at your standards, you can see, okay, what I would do first is put down all the things that you see need to be worked on, and then put them in categories, because you will find, like, a lot of them go together, like back-talking, rudeness, temper tantrums, anything mouthy, you will find goes in one category. Disrespect may be in a category. So you can usually take those things and put them in categories, because it's like whenever you work on one character that's in a category, it usually knocks down like a domino effect. Well, several of them will go out. Okay, like if everything in your home is mouthy and you're going to be working on mouthiness, what you're going to do with that. And when we look at training up a child, the ones tomorrow afternoon, we get into this more where you'll see the positive, how to start with the positive, how to work with the negative. I don't usually, when I work in a home, always start with the negative. We're going to start with the positive first, because very few children are positively rewarded. They're usually negatively rewarded. So a lot of them don't even know how to talk or what's expected of them, because we're always telling them what not to do instead of what to do. And so we want to look at that. But for mouthiness, anything disrespectful, then I always use cayenne. But first of all, I would reward them for positive ways that they talked, every time they spoke nicely to somebody, because it takes a lot, especially when you're angry or mad, to give back good when you feel that evil attacking you, to give back good. So I want my children to learn how to do that. And so I would start there first and look at some of those. So rather than to look at the negative, you know, some of the ones that you could show me that you have, let's look at the positive. And I'll be going through that and see if that would help. But yes, you can't do everything. And what I would usually do is say, Lord, which one do you see to be the one right now that needs to be taken care of? Because you know what I see. Also, you have to realize, how are you approaching it? I am a very justice-minded person. So I had to learn to put a lot of mercy in my child training, because I'm very justice-minded. And so whenever my kids would do something, it was almost like, how dare you speak to me that way? How dare you do this to me? How dare? And I had to realize, I cannot be where it's my child against me. I have to be on the same team with my child. It's us against this enemy. That my child spoke that way because Satan came into the heart. Something happened. And I need to fortify my child in some way that Satan can't enter into this child. That what is it that I need to do to help this child? And so a lot of it, my parenting and my discipline, had to change how I approached it to begin with. And once I got on this side and started working with my child, then I could see, what is it my child really needs? What are the areas that would help them? What are the standards that are most important to help them to be what Jesus needs them to be? Maybe they're not studying enough. Maybe they're not praying. And I have a whole two-part series on how to set up your home and a foundation to where you're meeting the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical of your home. Because not only do they need the spiritual, but they need time, too. They need a family time. They need game time. They need, you know, family things that you're doing. That's because there's a lot of stress in families. There's a lot of things going on, and they need that family time. And by just having that, a lot of discipline takes care of. And when I went to a home to work, honestly, I never did anything until I got the family on a schedule, because 50% of the discipline went away once the family was on a schedule. And so I didn't have to be there months and months and months at a time. I could go in for a short time. So the schedules were really important. But that's what I did, is always ask the Lord, which ones do you think needs to be worked on, and then try to see how many of those fit in the same category so I could work.